Yeshu Koyach. It's a special privilege to be able to speak to people that you hold in high regard. Besides holding in high regard the Chavrei HaKollel, I especially hold in high regard the Roshei HaKollel. And Baruch Hashem, that I'm zeichet to be asked to say a few words. Before I get to the topic, the Devin Ezra learns that the early Makkas were on everybody. The Yidden had them also. But I believe the Orev is the first Makkah which the Torah says Mefurish, the Flesi by Yoma who was at its Goshen, I said, Ami Ami the Lel, the Vilti Yosham Orev. So if you learn like Chazal that by the first Makkah when they took the water to drink it, the Yid took it, it would turn to water. If the guy took it, it turned to blood. So where's the big hiflesi? Where's the big hiflesi on the Makkas Orev that it wasn't in Eretz Goshen? But what's schwer in the Eben Ezra is, picture yourself as one of the Yidden, waiting for Gula, waiting for Yeshua, and finally there comes Makkas, and you're the recipient of the Makkas. Imagine the Nisayon of that. After all the anticipation and the waiting and the special chesed that before 400 years it looks like just coming upon us gula, and we're stricken with Makkas, and according to him probably there was a chelik of Mitzrayim in the Yidden. There was a chelik of Mitzrayim in the Yidden that had to share in the Makkas before the Yid could be singled out alone and separated and be able to see the Makkas go upon Mitzrayim. And as Goshen and on the Yidden, they are completely free from any worry of Makkas. When I was a bacha in yeshiva, in Yaakov Yosef yeshiva, there was a certain student that he was promoted every year in the Limud HaKodesh, but he was much, much weaker than his class. And then, on top of that, he got sick. We shouldn't know for it, maybe for 2, 3, 4 months. I don't remember the exact amount, but he was very sick and in danger. And when he came out with a ruach hasmada. He was determined to master learning. So he would ask the boys in his class if anyone would volunteer to teach him what they learned. And he would get a few volunteers. But he still didn't catch on. He still didn't get it. There was years before that of neglect. There was years before that of not being on par with his class. So he went down a class. And he asked the next class if there's anyone willing to learn with him, because the whole yeshiva was learning the same subject matter. And finally he came to me, to my class, which was two grades lower. And I considered it a covet. Secondly, his family was friends of my family. And he was very strong physically. And I made a condition that if anyone starts up with me, they'll have to answer to him. So I used to learn with him. But after a while, he stopped coming to me. The boys in the top two grades were enough to get him to know the Gemara. By the way, when he first started coming to me, he had gone through the Gemara already with many times with many people before he got to me. Then when he got to me, he was far from getting it. But towards the end, he was getting it. And then after some time passed, the Rosh Yeshiva of the whole yeshiva gave a Musa Shmuz, in which he said to the group, "You see the power of Torah. You see the power of Torah." And he mentioned this fellow by name. "See the power of Torah. How it's machkimas pesi. How it could take someone and develop him." Afterwards, he went to tell the yeshiva. He left Yaakov Yosef and he went to tell the yeshiva. He came to visit 2 years later, and at that time I was in the highest class, and Rav Chaim Zimmerman was the Rebbe, and he started to talk and learning with Rav Chaim Zimmerman. Rav Chaim Zimmerman asked him, "Let's hear from you a good kasha." So he told him Akasha. So Chaim Zinn said, "Who was the greatest genius I ever met in my lifetime?" So he told him Akasha. Says, "It's your own Kasha?" Says, "Yeah, it's my own Kasha." Says, "Because I asked the same Kasha of Chaim Zinn. I asked the same Kasha. You have a teretz?" So he says, "Yeah," and he tells him a teretz. He says, "I gave the same teretz." Then he asks him, "Let's hear another kasha." Again, he gives him a kasha. He says, I asked the same kasha." And he asks for a teretz. He says, "I asked the teretz." That was the biggest compliment he could give. Rav Chaim Zinnemann says, if he said he agreed with you, that was not the same compliment as he said, "I asked the same kasha." So I was like,
sitting in my seat, listening to how this is going to play itself out. So he says, I see you have a gewaltige cup. I see you have a marvelous brain. But you got to learn with more hasmad. So tears went down my cheek. I was crying. Imagine, this fellow should, Rav Chaim Zimmern, the great genius, should say on him that he has a marvelous head and he needs more hasmad. He later became the Yeredeya, the Chulin Yeredeya teacher in the Eretz Yisrael Yeshiva and one of the Masmichim, one of the people who signed on the Smicha. I used to learn in a Polish yeshiva. And in that Polish yeshiva, there were many big Talmid Chachamim that used to go, because it was open 24 hours a day, and people learned there with Hasmada. And Rav Simcha Shustel used to learn there, Rav Bruce used to learn there, Rav Shizgal Zecher Tzadik Lachi used to learn there. It was full of Talmidei Chachamim that had gone through Shanghai and the Mitzuyanim from Yaakov Yosef that learned in that shul. All of a sudden, there was robberies in that neighborhood of Sifrei Torah. The neighbor had started to change it. It became a little... the people who you have to visit Puerto Rico to find your hubcaps had moved in. So, there was robberies in Sifrei Torah. So they had a meeting that the shul should not be open 24/7 like it was in the past, but at 2 a.m. it should close. And that group won. And at 2 a.m. the shul should close. There were old men crying there. A shul should close? A shul should close? They were crying. The ones who lost. And they were going to close the shul. So, I used to like to learn Friday night all night. So one Friday night, I'm sitting and learning at 2 o'clock. The man comes in and he says, you got to leave. I said, I got to leave. I'm in the middle of learning. Lock me in. He said, no, I can't lock you in because this lock, you need a key to get out from the inside. He says, but I know another shtiebel, another Polish shtiebel, that I could take you to that shtiebel, and that's still 24/7 open. So I said, okay, I'll go with you to that shtiebel. So I went to that shtiebel. In that shtiebel, there was a yid. His name was Yaakov Dunn. He lost his father when he was 12 years old. You should know him. And he had to go to work. But he had a job that worked. That he came home from work at 5 p.m. At 5 p.m., he would lie down on the stove, which was cooling off, and he would sleep till 12, from 5 to 12. And from 12 till Shacharis, he learned all night. And he learned Gemara, he learned Rashi, he learned Tysus. And he grew up. When I met him, he was giving 2 shiurim a day in that Polish yeshiva. But not only that Polish yeshiva were full of big, big, heavy hitters, Talmidei Chachamim, that had learned in Shanghai and learned in other places.
So they would hit him with kashas, and he would give terusim. It was, and one of them said, you know, this yid would have been, was meant to be a god l'adar, this yid, he's unbelievable. But not only that, he had a boss that would pay him till he's entitled to unemployment insurance again, and then he would officially let him go, and he would sit and learn till he's entitled again to unemployment insurance. So sometimes when you asked him a very hard kasha, he would say, in another 6 weeks I'll give you a test. So, and to me he would say, when you get my age, you'll be busy with kashas and truths, and now sit and learn. But in actuality, I had the privilege of having to do with him with kashas and truths, and later he moved to Bnei Brak, and he gave 7 shiurim a day in Bnei Brak. And there was a very big Talmud Chacham in that shtibel that he lived through the war because he was fat, he had a hook nose, and the Germans used him, Yimach Shemam, they used him as the model of a Jew in the negative advertisement against Jews. He was the Jew that they used as the model. Joe Lewis, they used from pictures. But him, they actually fed him, took care of him. They used in person. And he was a big Talmud Chacham. He used to sit and learn there all the, through the whole war. He lived through the whole war because he was the Jew in the picture. And after the war, he sat and learned in the shtibel. He knew a tremendous amount. People used to ask him. So this Yaakov Dunn wrote him a letter, "Come to Bnei Brak, I'll support you." And this year he was no rich man of Yaakov Dunn. But he said, "Come to Bnei Brak, I'll support you. If I'm giving 7 shiurim a day, you'll give 10 shiurim a day." But he didn't have the courage to go to Bnei Brak. As I remember, I was 12 years old when I was sitting and learning in that shtibel. Lida, when I was 8 years old, I used to go to learn at night with the older bachurim, and I would buy 4 single cigarettes, so I should also be look like one of the older bachurim. And Lida. If I could give a donation and all the Nazis and all the Arabs should smoke cigarettes, I'd give a donation to help them buy the cigarettes. But now I was 12 years old, I'm sitting and learning this shtibel, a yid that they had pointed him out to me. He was a Reish Bezdin in Haifa. He was either a brother-in-law of Rav Baruch Be'er or a son-in-law of Rav Baruch Be'er. His name was Rav Turitz. Baruch Hashem, the Rav Hashem gave me the privilege of being able to help some of his descendants. But he came over and he brought me a tea. I'm a 12-year-old boy sitting in line. He brought me a tea. So he says, I notice you like tea, that you go to the tea. So do me a favor. So I said, Chas v'shalom, I'm not drinking the tea. So he said, no. I'm here to raise money. And the whole country here rubs me the wrong way, and it's hard for me to learn.
it'll be a chesed gadol if you let me bring you a tea, and you drink the tea when I bring it. So I drank the tea, but here was an adam gadol b'tayra, an adam gadol b'tayra. Again, either he was Rav Barba's brother-in-law or son-in-law. He has descendants, Rashi Yeshivas, and he was bringing this 12-year-old Bacha a tea to. There was a Yid, his name was Ben Tzion Apta. Ben Tzion Apta was a Hasidic Rebbe in Europe, and in the middle of a Fabreng was. The place was full of Hasidim. He gets up and says, I'm no Rebbe. I shouldn't be a Rebbe. I'm going to Uman. And I'm going to... He walks out and he became like a Breslov Chassid. He, obviously, it was in him from before. He gave up his rabbitzvah. So when he went to Uman, he didn't walk to Uman, he danced to Uman, he danced in the streets of Poland on his way, and not only that, the roads were all full of people with their mattresses, with their this, the cars couldn't ride, they were running away from the Nazis, and he was singing along on his regular path on his way to Russia. He knew of a way of getting through the Ural Mountains without having to climb up it or climb around it. There was one place where there was a hole underneath the Ural Mountains and you could creep under and get through. And he was going on that route. When he got through, and the Russians were waiting, because they knew this is a secret way to get through the Ural Mountains, and they were expecting from some of the other countries that they would send spies through that way, because no one knew that secret way, and they caught him, and they mishpated him to Siberia. They didn't know if he's a real spy, if he's not a spy, but anyhow, he knew that secret way. They sent him to Siberia. While he was in Siberia, every Shabbos, he ran the Shalashuddas. And in the Shalashuddas, he spoke against the Russians, the communists, during the whole Shalashuddas. Because the communists in that place were working on the Jews that were there to turn them to communism. It may have been a better facility or whatever it is over there. They had hopes that these Jews, they're going to make communism. So he was going, at the end of a year, they called, the NKVD called him in, and they read him back everything he said against the communists in the last year. Every word that he said against the communists in the last year, they read him back, and they paskin that he's going to be killed. A soldier is going to go out fully clothed, far out, and he's going to have him get undressed, and he's going to wait till he freezes to death, and then he'll bury him. A hole and bury him there. So he's out there, and the soldier tells him to take his clothes off. He starts taking his clothes off. He's singing, he's dancing, and the soldiers are just shivering. He's wearing clothes, layers and layers, and the soldiers. Finally, the soldier says, "Listen, I'm going to save your life, but I don't want to lose my life." He may have been a Yid for all I know, that soldier. He says, "But I'll make you a map, and I'll show you how to, where to, you know, where to go. You follow my map, and you go there, and you mix there. And so he makes him a map, and he went there, and he got saved. He saved his life. But he used to go, you know, poorly dressed, raggedy, this, that. He was always besimple. But I bumped into him, I see him like wearing a brand new kapot. I say, the Benzion, you're looking good, gewaldig, beautiful kapot. He says, yeah, it's so nice. So, anyhow, he says, you want to know how I got this kapota? Rav Chatzka Levenstein gave me this kapota. So I said, I don't want to take. You know I don't take. So Rav Chatzka Levenstein said to him, listen, this kapota is 27 years old. Do me a favor. Give me an excuse to buy a new one. Take the kapota and give me an excuse to buy a new one. So first of all, the kapota looked to me brand new. When I saw him, I was convinced it's a brand new kapota. And it was 27, I really believed that Rav Chatzka was telling him the truth, that it was 27 years old. There was a certain girl, she was a rabbi's daughter in Europe. She fell in love with an engineer, and she decided to marry him. But she didn't want to embarrass her father who was a rab. So she made up that they're going to sneak out one day and go to America. So they sneaked out one day and they went to America, and they settled in Texas. They settled in Texas, and the man became a very rich man, the husband. But one day she says to her husband, I read in the Jewish papers that there's a yeshiva in New York called Yeshiva Torah V'Das. I want us to send our oldest son, Matas, to that yeshiva. The husband didn't like the idea, but she begged him, she asked him, because he was suspecting maybe she's sorry that she left her father the Rav. But anyhow, he agreed. He went to Tavidas. He was learning with Hasmada. By the way, if I would be able to tell all the stories, you would learn how yeshivas turned from schools into yeshivas with basmidim. It wasn't there when I started. It became. In my time, there was in Tel Aviv Yeshiva, a club. It was called the 99-hour club. Try to figure out learning 99 hours a week. I had a chavrusah, a goyin of Yisrael Meir Kozner, so I asked him, were you in the 99 club when you went to Tel Aviv? He says, no. And when I was in Tel Aviv, it was the 79-hour club. Take my advice. 79 hours is also not a pushover to learn a week. And this was a time when Hasmada became an intrinsic part of the yeshivas, and it was something new and unique and very important in the development of yeshivas in America. So, anyhow, but he was a big master, this fellow, when he came. And then he would say, oh, I found a word that even Jastro don't know, rubber. and then but he was plugging away, He was plugging away, and he was getting frum. When he came home to visit, the father says, I don't want you going back to Torah V'das. It's too frum. But I found out from someone else that there's another yeshiva. It's called Yeshiva University High School, that I'm asking to send you. So he says, I'm asking to go on one condition, that you send my younger brother, Gershon, along too. He says, okay, I'll send Gershon along. Gershon was much younger. Gershon was around 13 at the time. But when he came, he taught him everything he knew. He sat and learned with Gershon everything he knew. He was, let's say, 17, and this one was 13. They met in that YU high school a Yid named Rav Gorelick. And this Rav Gorelick used to speak against YU. He was a Rebbe in YU. Get out of here, escape, go to real yeshiva. So somehow or other they got into that class. Later on, years later, I used to visit Rav Gorelick with them together. And they learned with unbelievable hasmada. Rav Hutner put them in the same room with Rav Aaron Schechter, the current Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Lviv. And I was in the next door room, so I broke the lock. Between the two rooms, there was a door with a lock. I broke the lock so that I had currency into that room as well. So the one day, but they're still learning with us, mother. So the father calls up Matis and says, "Listen, Matis, I decided to buy you a Cadillac. At that time, that was the best car that there was." So Matis says, "I'm not accepting because in Beis Medrash you can't ride with a Cadillac. It doesn't fit." So then other advisors gave him advice, send them a lot of money. They'll spend the money, they'll loosen up a little. So he sent, I meet them in the morning, they're going to the east side to buy for him. He says, my father sent us a real big check. So they're going to buy some. In the evening, I see them come home with sperm over their head. They barely could walk. I said, "You spent all the money?" He said, "No, he gave us credit besides." The first night I went to sleep with Chaim Berlin, it was a Saturday night, at 2:30 in the morning, these Wiesenfelds wake me up. Their father came for Shabbos for the week, and they had to be with him. So they missed the Friday shiur. So they're waking me up. I should tell them over the shiur. So the light was shut that you can't put them on. But in the hallway, the light flew on. So we go to the hallway, come to the hallway, and I'm talking, learning with them. All of a sudden, another fellow comes up from the Beis Medrash. He's full of anor that he just learned Emek Yeshua in Beis Medrash, and he tells us over here what he learned. And I'm looking at it. This is my first night in Chaim Berlin Yeshiva. This is 2:30 in the morning, and then in comes this other fella. I figure I better get to bed quick before the third guy comes up. One day I come to yeshiva and I missed I came during the day and I missed supper. When I came to it was locked. the kitchen was locked. So I never missed a supper in my life. I never knew what it was a no experience for me. What do you mean? What do you do if you miss a supper? So I'm looking to see it. So Rav Lezer Rabinowitz, who was a Baki Bashas and a Tzaddik and everything, he says, Hamnik, you look and see it. What are you looking to see it about? I said, I missed supper. The door was locked. So he says, what? You missed supper? So first of all, later on I understood by him it was a joke. It was like he took it. He said, what? You missed supper? Reb Nechemia. He calls over Nechemia Rabinowitz. He says, Reb Nechemia, Hamnik missed supper. Hamnik missed. We got to do something about it. So, first of all, Lezer Rabinowitz was an expert in picking a lock. So, first of all, he picks the lock, he opens it up. Not in the kitchen. Come into the kitchen, it's all locked. Everything is locked. There's a pantry room that's locked, and there's nothing in the kitchen to eat. So, Nechemia Rabinowitz, this is on the fifth floor. He comes out of the window and he starts walking on the ledge because he could tell that in that room the window is part open to where the food is. And he walks on the ledge. I'm too frightened to look. Five floors above the street. He's walking on the ledge. He walks on the ledge. He gets in there. Anyhow, they break in. They open up. And the two of them are making me suffer. Believe me, they were kind of a belt in making me that suffer. Because they were both mitsuyanim in learning. They were both older than me. And it made a tremendous impression on me that they took so serious that I missed supper. Which later I understood they didn't take so serious, but they did it like als chesed. I appreciated that supper. First of all, it wasn't a normal supper. They made French fried potatoes. They made all kind of treats over there. But whatever it is, it made a gewaldige reishim on this Talmud, this 15-year-old Talmud that came to Chaim Berlin. Made on me a tremendous choice. I want to also say that the Wiesenfels, they steigt eis. Gershon Wiesenfels was zeicher to marry the Chofetz Chaim's granddaughter. This man, they checked with the rabbi. And the rabbi said witness that the mother used to go to the mikveh, because anyone who went to the mikveh had to borrow the key from the rabbi's wife, whatever it is, and that even while the husband wasn't religious, they still kept the mikveh. The Chofetz Chaim's son-in-law had a daughter, and the marriage of Gershon Wiesenfels. But I missed a very big part of the story. All of a sudden, the father sees he wants to at least save his youngest son. So he sends papers to my Rebbe that he's going to charge him for kidnapping. He must send back Gershon, the younger one. So my Rebbe says to Moshe Gross, a Talmud there, says, you're going to visit me in jail. So the Moshe is, but he don't send them back. So he's a rich man, he hires private detectives and this, and they see that he's now in the building. He comes in with police, and they run up to the Rosh Yeshiva, they say, the police are coming up to get Gershon Wiesenfels. He says, put him in the Aron Kodesh. Rebbe says, put him in the Aron Kodesh. So that time they didn't have these steel ones, it was a wooden one, and they put him in the Aron Kodesh. And not only that, the whole yeshiva was learning, the whole Beis Medrash was learning. All of a sudden, they see the Aron Kodesh opening up, and they're putting in Gershon Wiesenfeld. And they're all learning. Then came the police, and they're looking, they're taking the place apart, and everyone is learning. They all know the secret, but they you couldn't tell. So so they had to go back. They didn't find him. But then he hired again, and he came at night, and he caught him. And this time the police department sent a Jewish sergeant to go into the yeshiva and get Gershon Wiesenfeld. So when they came, after they got Gershon Wiesenfeld, the father had put in so much, the father was so angry, he starts hitting the son. So the Jewish sergeant says, they're too religious, they don't want to go back to you, you're a child abuser. You better get out of here right now or I'm putting you under arrest. And he makes him go out, and then the father gave up already. He says, the father saw that it's been Ashabayim, he's not going to get him out. But that same father was walking around when Gershon Wiesenfeld did that shidduch with the Chafetz Chaim's granddaughter. He was giving out cigars. He was walking around. He was so proud. Because even the engineer there had heard of the Chafetz Chaim and didn't believe that his own son would ever be the grandson of the Chafetz Chaim. I have to stop. I didn't even begin, but but I got to tell one last story. There was. The yeshiva was in trouble. A guy, the judge, Paskud, he's closing down the yeshiva. There were some guys wanted bribes, and they were lining up the yeshiva for all kinds of things, and no one wanted to bribe them. You could get all kinds of trouble, and second of all, the yeshiva had no money to bribe either. So they were getting written up for all kind of different things, but they were making it look terrible. So the judge said, if the president of this organization does not appear for me to sentence him to 6 months in jail, I am closing the school. So they make a meeting in Brownsville. And they say, listen, the one guy we can't afford to lose is the president. Who is Menadev to be the president? So this is really an unsung hero that I heard from my son, that he heard it from the Yaakov Weinberg Tenhofer. So there was one year. He would come around and ask us kashas. If we would give him a teretz, he would cry. If we gave him a teretz to this kash, he would cry. He was so full of love for the Talmidim that you couldn't believe. He volunteered. And he went to jail for 6 months. And don't forget, that time the jail was not a place where you go to watch television. It was a jail. And he volunteered to be in jail. And when they write up a booklet about Chaim Berlin, about this donator and that honorary president and that, there's no picture of this man. He's one of the unsung heroes of Klal Yisrael. I went to jail for 6 months in order to save the yeshiva, and he saved the yeshiva.